Calling all distilleries, packaging companies, and designers. The American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine are thrilled to announce that we are now accepting entries for the 4th Annual Craft Spirits Packaging Awards. Sponsored by the Glass Packaging Institute, the awards celebrate excellence and creativity in the design of craft spirits labels and packaging. Visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org or CraftSpiritsMag.com to learn more. And enter by November 20th.
My goal, if I look at, you know, our overall mission statement to be one of the great small distilleries of the world, you know, my secondary goal as incoming president is to get this company to the third generation. You know, it gives me goosebumps to think about that, but there's nothing that would give all of us, I think, more pride than to continue the legacy that we're creating. And it gets harder and harder every day. We care for this business like our baby, and all of us are on the same page to take this into the next generation, beyond this one.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by Molly Lewis and Hannah Lowen of New Riff Distilling in Newport, Kentucky. In June, the distillery announced that next spring, founder and CEO Ken Lewis will retire, and Molly, who is Ken's daughter, Lowen, and Denny Gorman will assume leadership. Lowen, who currently serves as Vice President of Operations, will become CEO. Molly, currently the sales director, will become president. And Gorman will transition from director of engineering and logistics to COO. In this episode, Molly and Hannah discuss the leadership transition and maintaining family ownership, how Molly's and Hannah's backgrounds in wine and political organizing, respectively, help them in the whiskey business, new expressions and renovations at the distillery, and much more. To start, I asked Molly and Hannah when the conversation about the leadership transition began, and this is Hannah kicking things off.
As with many things at New Riff, it's been an organic conversation that then turns into a real conversation. So I think it's been in the works for a couple of years, and in a non-specific way. And then I think probably the last year is when we really started to talk about what it would look like and what we would be doing and all of this stuff. And Molly can talk a lot more about it from the family side of being a family-owned business and an independently owned business. But publicly, it was relatively recently. But we've been talking about it for a while now.
Yeah, I just to echo what Hannah said, we have been talking about it for a while internally. So it was a little bit of a relief that it was finally out to the public this summer. You know, I think that it's always been in the game plan. I mean, just because of Ken's age, and this is his second successful career, but, you know, he's had other things that he's endeavored, but, you know, it was the second chapter, his second career. And so just by nature of his age and stage of life, we knew that he would be retiring at some point in the next, you know, 1 to 10, 20 years, right? So we decided on a time that felt right, where he'd gotten New Riff to a point where it was a comfortable transition. We joke internally that we've gotten to our toddlerhood. You know, we are a little bit out of the startup infancy stage, and now we're in the toddlerhood, maybe the terrible threes.
and so then I guess the fact that you all have been talking about it for so long, you were ready for this. Like, could this happen? You know, if not that you would need it to, but would you be ready tomorrow to say, like, oh yeah, let's flip the switch on all this?
I was just going to say, I think Ken's done a great job of really mentoring and training us, you know, especially Hannah, to take over the day-to-day operations. You know, I think honestly, Hannah's been really running the show behind the scenes for a lot longer than folks know. I think there would be some growing pains. I mean, Ken is such a, you know, a force, and he's got such a wealth of experience and knowledge being 50 years in the industry. Lucky for us, he's stepping back from the day to day, but we'll still be on our board. and will still be involved in large decision making. So, you know, if someone said, okay, it's tomorrow, I think we'd go, oh my God, but we'd be fine.
Yeah, I was going to say that it depends on your definition of ready. Because I think in a lot of ways, as Molly said, you know, Ken is, you know, it's not an accident that he's been incredibly successful in business. And so some of these transitions have been happening naturally or organically for many years, you know, and that ability of him to put a team together who's going to, you know, run the show. And he has turned more and more into an advisor and, you know, that kind of able to share that experience and mentor this team. And so I think tomorrow we'd probably be okay. I couldn't be happier to have the next 4 months as well. And these conversations are things we're talking about every day. But there is some stuff that for years, you know, Ken has been out of the day-to-day and Molly's been running, or I've been running, or Denny, who's our colleague, or Brian Sprantz, our head distiller, or Jay Erisman, some of these folks that have, you know, they've always been doing it. And I think it's one of the things we really have going for us is that we know each other, we trust each other, New Riffs, the whole team, not just this kind of new group of leaders. And so there's some trust that, you know, it's not a new big scary person entering the room that's going to change everything. You know, our best success is to keep us going in the direction we are, because we like the way we're heading so far.
And you mentioned Denny, who's not with us, but is also part of this incoming leadership team. Tell me a little bit about him and what kind of qualities he brings to the table.
Absolutely. Well, Denny is an engineer and is brilliant and caring, works his ass off. And he's a wonderful counterbalance, I think, to Molly and I. And you know, we all three have this, we bring different stuff to the table, which is exciting. And I think depending on the way you're looking at the conversation, you know, you'll end up with one or two people kind of, you know, Denny and I tend to be more conservative than Molly. Molly and I tend to be a little bit more pushing than Denny. Denny and Molly tend to be a little bit, they cuss less than me, et cetera. So he brings a really, all joking aside, you know, he brings a level of expertise and thoughtfulness in our production, the way he collaborates with Brian, you know, and just the day-to-day operations of running a manufacturing plant. We're making whiskey, like, you know, we're starting with silos that are outside of the windows of our tasting room. I mean, we are a real place that's really making whiskey, and Denny is minding all of that in a way that, between him and Brian Sprantz, Molly and I do not have to worry about what's happening in the physical plant. And that's a major attribute to him and Brian and the teams that they've built that are here executing day to day.
So it's, you know, it's kind of like a family, which is a good segue into the fact that there's this letter on your website right now, written by Ken, and it says, "We are 100% Kentucky family owned by a single family. We have no partners, no investors, no other shareholders." And so the obvious question is, will that change at all in the future?
Well, absolutely not, as far as we're concerned. I mean, you know, that's something that we live, breathe, and think about every day, you know, and we are 100% committed to remaining a family business. My goal, if I look at, you know, our overall mission statement to be one of the great small distilleries of the world, you know, my secondary goal as incoming president is to get this company to the third generation. You know, it gives me goosebumps to think about that, but there's nothing that would give all of us, I think, more pride than to continue the legacy that we're creating. And it gets harder and harder every day, you know, so we care for this business like our baby, and all of us are on the same page to take this into the next generation beyond this one.
I haven't asked too many folks this in the distilling world, I feel like, but I used to write about beer, and it was like this constant thing where, like, you know, the bigger breweries, like, everybody, and this is years ago too, so when like AB InBev was buying up things constantly, but like you know, like Sierra Nevada famously, they were like, yeah, we get calls like every week to like buy the brewery. So I'm curious if that's something that happens to you all at New Riff right now. Like, are you, does that happen a lot, or is that not a thing?
I think it's pretty public that we're committed to remaining a family business. I mean, I don't think, you know, conversations go very far. You know, we're pretty firm about where we're at. We live and breathe it. Our staff repeats the message, you know, so we do our best to make sure that that's what's communicated.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly fielded phone calls that are, as Molly said, met with a really respectful. It's not critical or judgmental of other businesses that go that route. But, you know, we have the great benefit of the commitment from Molly and her parents and into building this place. And, you know, it's just such a core part of who we are. Yeah. I think after a while it's just kind of known.
Gotcha. Okay.
But I love being in any conversation with Sierra Nevada. Just in general, I'm just thrilled to get mentioned with them. There are, you know, our beer idols, of course.
It's partially on my mind because I'm going there this afternoon because they're 15 minutes down the road for me in Mills River, North Carolina.
So that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, enjoy your afternoon there.
Yeah, thank you. So you know, we were kind of going towards, you know, your backgrounds a little bit. I think they're Hannah, I'm kind of curious to know how for you an early career in political organizing set you up for success to run a distillery. And as you're answering that, you know, just if you could also just kind of tell us a little bit about your role now and how it will change, if at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it certainly was not a career path that I was expecting or wrote in any way. I grew up in Louisville. So, you know, our families know each other, Molly and I's families know each other. And I had fled Kentucky for the West Coast and was working in politics, but I was doing a similar role. I was in operations and management of a nonprofit. It just was mission driven and, you know, had the benefit to go through a couple of, you know, really exciting and, you know, hardworking years in political organizing, where some of those lessons like apply broadly, I think, in any industry. And literally got a phone call from Ken. I was sitting in my cousin's apartment who lives in Uruguay, and he said, hey, we're opening a bourbon distillery in Kentucky. You want to come back up and talk to Molly and I? And of course I said, yes, I would like to have a conversation with you guys. And, you know, Ken and I, this was probably in 2012, you know, there was no like role specifically written for me. It was like, we need someone to come help figure things out. Maybe you want to do it. We kind of shook on it. Ken and I did at a dog park in Louisville that I would move back to Kentucky in about a year and help get New Riff off the ground. And so, you know, I think, if you're a person who is prepared and works hard, then any opportunity can become a big opportunity. And, you know, I like to think that the door got opened and I, you know, rushed through and knocked things off the table on my way in and tried to make myself, you know, indispensable. And some of those things that got drilled into me in political organizing, you know, matter on a day-to-day basis. Like there's a famous principle I was taught, which is to reject the tyranny of or and embrace the genius of and. And, you know, in politics, that's, you know, you can imagine how that can get communicated, but it makes sense here too. And I think that goes to the entrepreneurial spirit we have and how innovative and creative we can be, you know, other stuff. Like there's an organizing principle around small room, big crowd. Like you never want to be too big. And that's about not feeling empty in a space, literally, if your candidate's giving a speech. But, you know, think about the size that New Riff is. Like we've really tried to find this niche that we didn't need to be the biggest in the world. Our mission is to become one of the great small distilleries. And so those things have applied broadly. I use them all the time. But, you know, I think my role change in brief is, you know, I think if Ken is a visionary entrepreneur, I see myself certainly more as like an intrapreneur, which is a term I learned about in the last few years, which is driving that change and aligning a people strategy with business strategy, but inside of a business. And the amount of, you know, risk tolerance that somebody like Ken has who, to leave an incredibly successful business, launch a completely new unknown thing, like that's not my bag. I wouldn't have started it alone. But now that there's some momentum and we've got something to really build and grow and protect, I think I'm perfect person to lead that. And so I think a lot of the shift for me is going to be stuff that I literally have done for many years and continuing to build our team and those processes and that culture, creating a vision that other people are able to keep driving it forward and, you know, keeping us along with Molly, like true to our values and to be a strong leader and take the hits when I have to for the team and keep us moving forward. So I'm very excited about it, but it's definitely different. I mean, it's a shift from being in the day-to-day to learning to like let go of some of these things and trust we have a badass team. They're crushing it. And so just getting to be more in a space to support them is pretty awesome.
I'm curious, was that initial like lure to come back, was it the lure to come home to Kentucky? Was it a chance to work with the family? Was it a chance to work in bourbon, or was it just a combination of all of those things?
It was definitely a combination. I mean, I'm a food and bev lover. I, you know, not in any sort of professional level, but, you know, like was home brewing and very into, you know, all the restaurants and delis I had worked in my 20s. And a lot of it was just the family and knowing the success of the Party Source and who they are as people, you know, and like I said, I really, when I signed on, thought it seems like an opportunity I can't not do. And I'll just try it out. You know, I'll just see what it's like. And, you know, it was, the excitement was intoxicating, literally. No, I'm kidding. It just was so cool to be a part of in the very beginning, and every step, the feedback you got from the outside world and from our customers and from the industry and from each other, you know, all of a sudden I looked up and yeah, it's been 10 years and here we are. So combination.
Yeah. And then Molly, you also left too. You know, but obviously like the business of spirits had to be just ever present for you growing up. Is there ever a time that you don't remember like the spirits business?
You know, no, I mean, I grew up, you know, Ken had already opened a retail space. I mean, he started working in the spirits business when he was 24 years old. So, you know, I came along in his late 20s and, I sort of grew up, you know, my dad was never home. He was always working. He was always in the store. You know, so I would go see him in the store and there was always wine and liquor all around. You know, I was introduced to wine at the table after I turned 18, you know, responsibly, and fell in love with wine. And it just, you know, in almost a very European way, was just part of the meal. Probably prematurely, you know, to the boom where now that's more the norm. But yeah, it's just been a fun industry to grow up in inside.
And at what point did you decide I want to study wine? And talk just a little bit about, you know, that journey of going off, and, you know, I think you worked in California and in Italy, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, in all transparency, I think Ken was always trying to figure out a way to get me to come into the family business, you know, initially when it was the Party Source first, and retail wasn't my thing. You know, I just, I was fortunate enough also that I was always really encouraged to explore what I wanted to do. So, I went to a visual art magnet high school, and that led to a degree in the arts. So, you know, luckily I had that encouragement. I feel very privileged and fortunate to have done that. But when I graduated college and I was floundering a little bit, you know, it's hard to make any money in the world of art. I remember sitting with my dad, I was in my early 20s, and he said, "Well, you go out to California and learn something about wine." He said, "You drink enough of it." And so I did. And I enrolled at the Culinary Institute of America out there. They had a wine certificate. It was in the beginning stages of that certificate program, and lived in Napa. I worked at Behringer. I poured white Zinfandel, you know, and just started learning about wine and really fell in love with it. I fell in love with the culture of it. I've always been someone who appreciates the art of making things and geography. And so wine, and subsequently bourbon, but wine initially was a real mixture of those loves. You know, I loved being around the makers, and being around something that was created and authentic. And it's just, it's really exciting to see that, you know, go from, you know, grape to glass in that case. So I fell in love with the industry and, you know, worked my way around. I don't feel like I had a very linear path at all in the wine industry. I mean, I worked in the tasting room at Behringer, and then I worked in some restaurants. I got a degree as a sommelier. I had a foray working in distribution. I ended up in Italy, really, in all transparency, because I followed a guy there. It ended up being one of the best decisions of my life, the travel, not the guy.
Okay.
But I ended up staying there for many years. And, you know, that was really exciting too. I mean, just being in a real wine region. I was in Piemonte in the northwest of Italy. And, you know, some of the great wines of the world come from that area, the Barolos and the Barbarescos of the world, Nebbiolo grape. And so having the opportunity to meet the makers and learn the family histories. I mean, some of these wineries date back generations. You know, it's always been in the family and whatnot. So that became a real passion of mine. And I think Ken was still trying to get me to come back and work in the Party Source. And then when he and Jay started dreaming up New Riff, I was currently living in Italy. And that really piqued my interest, you know, because bourbon, you know, is America's great native spirit. So there was a real similarity between what I was doing and experiencing in Italy and what was being proposed to me. So it really piqued my interest. And, you know, I got in on the early stages of the dream. You know, and being a family-owned business and whatnot, it all just sang to me. So I came rushing back to Kentucky, and it's been exciting ever since.
And going from, was it vice president of sales? Am I getting that right?
My current title? Yeah. My current title is the director of sales. It's really director of trade sales. So I handle currently anything that leaves the building. So I handle all of our distributor relationships and our trade team.
What does the transition to president look like for you?
Yeah, so it is a big transition, and I can't say that we have it entirely hashed out. You know, what's really important as Ken takes a step back in the day to day is protecting the family legacy. So we started with that at the beginning of this podcast, you know, ensuring that this business gets from one generation to the next. And that's protecting everything that we're building here, protecting the legacy, working with Hannah and Denny on you know, the culture remaining the same, taking care of our little part of the world, our 50 plus full-time employees here at New Riff. I will be handing over a lot of my day-to-day sales obligations. There's just not going to be enough time to do both. And, you know, it is becoming more and more of a competitive landscape out there. We definitely need to have someone who can completely focus on that 150%. So we are working out the details of what will be kept and what will be transitioned over to another very capable person.
We've talked a lot about family. We've talked a lot about just being an amazing small craft distillery. But I'm curious, in each of your own words, what to you makes New Riff unique?
Molly, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I like to go back again to, you know, some of our early adapted mission statements, or dare I say even taglines. I mean, we are a new riff on an old tradition. So we are a young distillery that is very, very respectful of the history of American whiskey production and bourbon specifically here in Kentucky. We're not shaking it up. We're not rebellious. We're not challenging the status quo. We are respectfully aware of the historic production of this great spirit in this great state, and we're putting our own spin on it. And so when I think about New Riff, I think of us as innovators, but at the same time, really respecting the sour mash regimen, respecting bottled and bond regulations, you know, respecting some of the things that work, that make the spirit so great already. And then just putting our own riff on it, if you will, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have a ton to add to that. I agree, you know, 1,000%. I think, you know, as the industry has changed, I think some of the things that we just assumed were a baseline have become really important. You know, like we, I wrote down earlier in a meeting, literally as like a marketing campaign idea, like, hey, we make it here. Like, you know, it's a real place where we are trying to do things right in the most simplistic terms about the quality of the product. And, you know, that liquid that's in our bottle is not just corn and rye and water, but it's kind of like a in a corny way, it's the distillation of who we are and how we care for our community and our staff and our customers. And we, in that old school way, feel like if we're treating all of those people right, it's getting into the whiskey somehow, it's getting to our customers, that's driving our ability to impact our community. And so, you know, so I remember someone said to us, like, Molly, do you remember this, in 2018, like right when our New Riff bourbon had come out, because we had been distilling since 2014 without putting any product out. We wanted to wait till it was at least 4, because that baseline of ours is bottled and bond. Someone wrote something that said, like, you know, they're young, but they're doing it right. And I feel like it really stuck to us and stuck with us, of this idea that, like, it's not smoke and mirrors. It's real. It's a hard path to walk, to stay independently owned, but we're doing it. And that's where our kind of fierceness comes in, is staying on that path and not rebelling against the traditions of bourbon making. God knows there's fantastic bourbon being made in our Commonwealth. That's been around for many, many, many years. So, yeah, I just think that spirit of, like, trying to take the high road, and it's our job to make sure we can keep doing that and putting out awesome whiskey that, you know, can lift up, as Molly said, our little corner of the world.
When I get in front of, you know, a sales team in a new market or a new state, you know, people have short attention spans, right? Or if I'm presenting to a buyer in an account, you know, the takeaways that I hope that is conveyed about New Riff are, yes, we're family owned. We do not cut corners. We're committed to quality at every turn. And that's not, like, as Hannah says, not just what's in our bottle, but it's the packaging, it's our people, it's our culture. You know, and the fact that we don't purchase any juice, you know, in an ever complicated and ever crowded category, not just Kentucky, but domestically, you know, in all 50 states, bourbon, we are really proud of the fact that everything that goes into a bottle is distilled, aged, and bottled here on our property. And that's a commitment we've made to our customers. That's a commitment we've made to ourselves. That's a commitment we've made to our families and the next generation. And so these value systems are really what makes us great, I think. And what do set us apart from other brands out there?
And you mentioned the packaging, which shamelessly I'm going to plug for Craft Spirits Packaging Awards, which entries are open for right now at craftspiritsbag.com. But your bottle really is beautiful. Just the, you know, it's dark at the top, and then it, can you talk a little bit about how that design came about?
Well, yeah. that was a fun one. You know, we were all involved in the design process, you know, but we started, if you take the shape of the bottle, and I'll let Hannah talk about the decorative part of it. But if you take the shape of the bottle, the shape is actually a pretty traditional bottle. You see that bottle in, for a lot of great brands are using the bottle, you know, that was our nod to the past. That was our nod to history. That was our nod to not shaking things up too much. We weren't coming up with some super modern angular bottle. You know, we wanted to use a traditional, beautiful whiskey bottle.
Yeah, it's, you know, what's cool about a company our size is, like, you know, Molly and I and Ken and Jay and like two other people, like, got to make all those decisions together. And so we worked with an awesome design firm here in Cincinnati. And for folks who probably aren't thinking about like the background consumer product goods of the United States, but Procter & Gamble is headquartered in Cincinnati. And there is a outsized amount of really talented graphic design and specifically packaging design firms in Cincinnati because of Procter & Gamble. And Kroger is also headquartered here. So, you know, we bat above our weight on talent in that world. And so we only had to go, you know, literally 4 minutes across the river to find a fantastic design firm. And they are one of a handful of, you know, world-class graphic designers we've worked with over the years that helped put together the package. And as Molly was stating, like, we wanted to pick something that was tied to the old tradition, iconic whiskey shape. The embossing on the glass is an ode to that old style bottle, but put our own riff on it and something that would stick. And I think, especially at that time, like, our packaging was our only marketing. Like, we didn't have a marketing budget. We just were like, we should make sure this bottle looks good. You know, there are some funny stories. Like, if you look at the top of our bottle, if anyone out there is drinking while they're listening, the actual very top by the bar top is clear. And in all of the original design drawings, our team had the ombre, is what we call it, that black coating, go all the way to the top. And when we started working with, we work with a company called Saver Glass, who's, you know, industry leader in glass, probably a sponsor of you guys at all the trade shows.
They are. Indeed.
They were like, yes. Oh, yeah, we can't actually coat it all the way to the top because the machinery had to grab somewhere on the bottle. And so, you know, we were scrambling to find a bar top that would be black so that it didn't look, you know, you could imagine if you were scanning up this bottle and then there was like a tan cork in the shank, how much that would throw things off. So it was a really hands-on experience, and we really invested our time and our creativity to get to it. And, you know, the fact that people mention it is like one of the greatest compliments we get, because we worked really hard to get to it. It wasn't accidental. And I think it's standing up well. There are some other benefits. Like, I remember when we first, our first runs on our new bottling line in 2018, when we had been hand bottling gin for 4 years, you know, the fill heights got easily masked. And of course, now if you use an X-ray, they are dead on. But back in the day, the ombre had some other ancillary benefits that we didn't hate either. So it's done well. You know, it's got legs. It's nice. We always say it's a handsome bottle.
Well, no, it is. And I definitely didn't even notice like the clear part of the top, and like you said, the black cork there does a nice job of hiding it. And I think you're right. Yeah. If it was like tan, that would stick out. So, yeah.
Well, that's why Molly is in charge of our sales, because I'm on here taking your time, pointing out the things that doesn't matter. And you probably shouldn't even notice.
What? I think it's cool.
Know, it's that nerdy stuff that I tend to geek out on. So, yeah, I appreciate it being noted. We really love it too.
Well, let's, if we can, let's geek out for a minute on what you're excited about release-wise right now. I feel like I recently saw you had a Sour Mash Kentucky Single Malt Whiskey come out. Can either of you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, Molly, go ahead.
Yeah, we were really excited about this one, and we waited a long time to share it publicly. So, you know, I say we, but this was really the brainchild of Jay Arisman, our co-founder, with Ken and Brian Sprantz and his team. And this is a real, it's a whiskey that we really feel like, you know, there are a couple whiskeys that we make. I mean, we love everything we make, right? It's like, you know, all of your children, you just love them all differently. But there are a couple of whiskeys that we make that we really feel like we are going to hang our hat on that are real reputation builders. And our Sour Mash Single Malt is that for us. You know, we talked about the tradition of bourbon baking here in Kentucky, and we consider the sour mash, we call it the sour mash regimen. You know, it's the real traditional way of making whiskey here in Kentucky, you know, using the back set from one cook for the next one for consistency. And then we love Scotch whiskey. Jay and Brian and their teams, you know, really love malted barley and the tradition of making whiskey in Scotland. And so the idea was to marry the two. And they did it more than 7 years ago. This whiskey is our oldest whiskey that we've released to date. So it says aged at least 7 years on the bottle. Some of the barrels were almost 8 years old. So that long ago, they thought, you know, this would be a really exciting collaboration. And dare I say, they didn't think anyone else was doing it out there. And there has been a bit of an explosion of American single malt in domestically on the scene, but we still think we are making the first sour mash, at least announced on the bottle, sour mash single malt. And it's delicious.
I will say I see these press releases all the time about all these new spirits, and I don't remember seeing a sour mash one. So I'm not the ultimate fact checker, but it seems right.
Yeah, I mean, if I can add, it's people often ask us like, okay, well, what's the new riff? What's the new riff? What is the new riff? And this is the most shining example of that, where we are. As Molly said, we have these influences of other world whiskeys, and Brian Sprantz, who's our head distiller, was a brewer for 15 years, super well respected in the industry. And so between Jay and Brian and kind of this like encyclopedic knowledge of malts, and you know, that bottle is the culmination of actually five different mash bills. So it's not just a singular one grain malt that's a blend across barrels, et cetera. It's five different mash bills. There's 11 different individual malt varietals. There's six different barrel types. And so the blending and putting all of those colors back together afterward, it is, you know, one of those super provocative riffs. And what's really funny is like, so if you've ever been to the distillery, we have this beautiful, you know, Vendome copper column still. It's a 24-inch still. And we have a pot still. We have a 500-gallon pot still. And when we opened the distillery, the intention was that we were actually going to experiment or explore some of these types of whiskeys on the pot still. We actually used to have a brewery back in the day. It was called 8 Ball. May she rest in peace, 8 Ball. Where we were going to brew and make the mash and truck it up, you know, down the street, which was, you know, 500 feet away, and distill it. And what Brian and his team started doing was making those same whiskeys, these interesting mash bills, these inspired recipes on the column, and they were sour mashing them. And so it was like, you know, we thought we wanted to experiment on the pot still, and instead we found it to be way more exciting to do it on the column. And so that sour mashing and the fact that we're running it through the column and that it's going into new charred oak, not all the malt is obviously, but it's been really, really fun. So this project in particular is the culmination of a lot of different experimenting we've put out, and we've made it year over year over year. So the idea is that every year there will be a new edition of the blend. It will be changing, of course, because the barrels and the time spent in them has evolved, and we'll be able to pick off one-off single barrels or blends. Like, you know, there's a little bit of peated malt in here, but not a ton. But, you know, is there a smokier version someday? And so it's pretty exciting. It's definitely what Jay said the other day. I was in a meeting with him, and he said it was a malt you could shake. Like, it drinks a little bit like a bourbon, in my very humble opinion. It's big boned. It's like, it's got a lot to it. And so, you know, it stands up in a cocktail in a different way. It's not, I wouldn't describe it as particularly like soft or quiet. It's got some big bones, that's for sure. But it's been really exciting. And if you haven't had your hands on a bottle, we'll have to make sure you get some heading out your way.
That would be lovely. Is there anything else that's come out recently or anything that's on the horizon in the next little bit of few weeks, months that you're excited to talk about?
Yeah, I mean, we try to release, we've made, our distilling team and has made a lot of interesting whiskey over the years, and much of it is still in the warehouse. So, you know, we have an awesome whiskey club where twice a year we release these kind of rare things. But the most exciting thing that's going to start happening soon is some of our older product will start to come out. So we've always kept about a third of everything we've made to age out, to get a little bit older. And so our flagship whiskeys, our bourbon and rye, are usually 4 years old. Our malted rye is 6. And of course, as Molly alluded to, this is kind of our oldest age statement, which is a blend of 7 and 8 year olds. But we will, and I cannot share the detail or our marketing team would, you know, zap me from across the room, but, you know, look forward to seeing some older age statements coming out in the next year or so. And, you know, we're really excited to bring those out finally. They've been quietly resting in the warehouse all these years and ready to share them with the world.
And I'd like to give a shout out to our 6-year-old malted rye, our 100% malted rye. I mean, you know, if you ask anyone internally what, you know, internally within the company, what we like to drink, I would say the lion's share of us like to drink our rye, even our bottled in bond rye. You know, at this point, I don't even really drink our bourbon that much. I know I probably shouldn't say that, but I'm all about the rye. I like that spice. You know, I put it in all my cocktails that would normally call for bourbon. But our malted rye is really kind of a cool thing too. And we produce it quarterly. So it is available in all the markets that we are in, albeit it's hard to find, but it is 100% malted rye. So it's very unusual. You know, we always talk about it as a malted whiskey first, a malt whiskey first, and a rye secondarily, because it's very soft and it's very elegant. And it's a unique category. You know, it's not like you're going to see a lot of malted rye shelf sets out there. So that's something to kind of look out for when you're out and about too.
And that's one of the ones that I've been sampling here the last few days, and the way that you described that is perfect. I'm not gonna argue with any of that, because it's been really beautiful to taste through. And I feel like that, you know, there's a lot of bourbon drinkers out there that, you know, love to go to rye too. And it's kind of like I don't want to say that you graduate to it because you still want to drink bourbon, but I don't know. That just seems like a kind of a normal progression, right?
The spice is fun. You know, yeah. Jay taught me years ago, you know, he said, it's kind of like salsa. You know, most people like mild salsa, and then you kind of get to medium, and then you kind of get to spicy. And so not for everybody, but rye definitely offers that spicy element that you don't find as much in corn-based bourbon.
Yeah. And even our flagship bourbons are high rye bourbons. You know, they've got 35% rye in them. And so, you know, I've heard us described as like a rye house before. And, you know, quantity wise, it's not one for one in any way. We make a lot more bourbon and have started to put out some wheated bourbons, et cetera. But we're a reflection of ourselves, and there's a lot of rye fans inside the building, and you know, finding ways to share, that's always fun.
Fun fact, we actually mash pound for pound more rye than corn at New Riff.
Wow.
Because our mash bill is such a high rye mash bill, and then all of the different fun specialty ryes we make. So if you add it all up, yeah. So we like rye.
Yeah, yeah. we've talked about, you know, changes, and I understand you all have had a lot of changes at the distillery with your tasting room and just kind of renovations in general. So Kind of quickly walk me through what all that has looked like and where things are now.
Yeah, it's an exciting time. We opened in 2014, and at the time in Kentucky, the laws in the state meant we couldn't even pour people cocktails back then. You know, we could pour samples, and we had an event center where caterers would come in and support the events. And so, we've been really supportive of a lot of the legislative changes that we've worked, directly with the Kentucky Distillers Association on. And so the culmination of those are that we can have a pretty, robust tasting room and the ability to sell some exclusive bottles. So this year we kicked off a renovation of our public spaces at the distillery. So we actually have two campuses at this point. They're 2 miles away from each other, both in Newport, Kentucky. But we revamped our first floor. If you were to walk into the distillery earlier this year, we had an itty bitty tasting bar, our retail shop and offices on the first floor. And like on a Saturday between folks waiting to go on the tour and grabbing a bottle and having a drink, I mean, it was packed, really, really packed, a little bit chaotic at times. And so one of the silver linings of COVID, to be perfectly honest, is when we had to shut down our event center, I think it gave everybody just enough space to say, wow, we don't really want to host events anymore. Not at that level, not that we don't like hosting private events, but weddings or corporate businesses that were with folks not terribly interested in New Riff the whiskey or New Riff the brand. They were just looking for a space. And, we felt like we could replace that income. And as we started to host, if you guys remember COVID happy hours where you would like be with your friends, but 25 feet away.
Yep.
So we had this big event center and we started to have happy hours that first summer. And people, we heard over and over again from our customers, we didn't even know this was up here because it's on the third floor of the building, because they had never been invited to a private event. And it just gave us enough kind of zeal to move forward. And it took a while to run out those events, but we kicked off this year, this renovation. So the whole first floor has been renovated. The visitor center is updated. We've got a beautiful new shop. It's more spacious. There's a place to start and finish our tours. We have a, big range of types of experiences we offer, tours and tastings. We have a really cool thing that's going to launch later in the year that's going to have a lot of options to customize and personalize your bottles right there in-house, live and on site. And then the, piece de resistance is that we flip the entire third floor from an event center to a tasting room. So that should be online hopefully before the end of the year. I've dealt with enough contractors that I won't say the dates out loud for fear of being, struck by lightning.
Sure.
But our team, they look like they're doing a pretty good job, and we might be earlier than we think, but it'll be an opportunity to come. It'll be a full tasting room, only New Riff products though. So our extensive libraries and these things that we've held in the warehouse where, if we found a barrel of something that was amazing, for us to sell it by the bottle generally makes everybody mad, to be perfectly honest. It's like, there's not enough to go around. We can't actually satiate the demand for it. It just frustrates a lot of our customers who we want to be, happy and fulfilled. But if we can pour it over the bar by the glass, it can reach more people. And so it'll be a beautiful space. We'll have a little bit of food, not dinner, but I guess if you ate everything on the menu, you could make it a dinner.
There you go.
And our hope is to really have a place to engage and talk to our customers, because the number one thing we hear from folks on tours or people who've been at single barrel selections is like, well, where should we go? And we love sending those folks out to our, the amazing local network of bars and restaurants up here in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati, but we want them to have a drink at New Riff before they go and get introduced to some products they might not normally see, have the ability to purchase an exclusive bottle that's just in the shop, create a little bit of that treasure hunt. So, it's going to be gorgeous. I mean, it's not as big as the event center was. We've chopped up the room a little bit, so we have some prep and a private space, but big, beautiful U-shaped bar, a lot of outdoor space, just a comfortable place to come with your boo and have a cocktail, or a whole crew where you really want to learn and engage. We'll be ready to host. It's going to be really fun.
Nice. And am I right that you're next year you all will celebrate your 10th anniversary?
Yep, next June.
Any big plans for that, or is that still TBD?
I will tell you it's TBD, but there is going to be a big plan.
Okay.
It's just not fully formed yet. We definitely want to celebrate.
That's perfectly understandable. What does New Riff look like in another 10 years?
Great question. Well, in all transparency, we hope it looks a lot like what it looks like right now. You know, we don't aspire to grow much larger than we are currently. You know, we're happy with our size. We like our position in the marketplace. We like being a big little guy and a little big guy. You know, we hope we're just making the same quality. We aspire, you know, we aim to make the same badass whiskey. We'll have a lot of older age statements at that point. We will be 10 years more established, 10 years in our britches. And we just aspire to be one of the great small distilleries of the world.
Yeah, I second that. You know, I think in a lot of ways we see ourselves with a lot of potential to be like a transformational employer to our teams, and being able to walk that walk. Like, we're there, we're going there. And I feel like in another decade, we will all be very confident to say, yeah, we are, you know, and all of that again gets reflected and distilled down into that product. And so I would be thrilled that we are, you know, three steps closer to that goal of becoming a great small distillery of the world, which, as you know, there's no sash for. We'll never be like, you know, no fairy will come down and bless us on either shoulder that we've made it there. But there's little postmarks along the way. And so whether that's with older product or an even, you know, richer range in our portfolio and the types of accounts and places we get to be and collaborate in, but it should be in the same direction. You know, I think Molly and I and Denny and our team will be really proud if we are, you know, more deeply entrenched, but in the same direction we're already going.
So Molly and Hannah, you've been doing this for a little while now. You're getting ready to take over leadership of New Riff. To young women that might be out there listening right now and are thinking about getting into the spirits business, what advice do you have for them?
Follow your dreams. Yeah, that's a great question. You know, luckily we live in a time where, you know, this is a good time to be a woman and follow your dreams. If your dreams are taking you into the spirits industry, there's nothing that you can't do. You know, I have been a proponent for my entire career as a aficionado that we have a very women have a better palate. Oh, did I say better? I mean, a really good palate. So go for it. Reach the stars.
Yeah, I agree. I think find your people. You know, I've always felt very lucky at New Riff that, you know, the parts of myself that are, you know, elements of my identity or anybody here were, you know, valued. And I didn't ever feel like inside of our building that it was a thing. And, you know, you go outside of the building and in different spaces, I think any woman in this industry in particular, you know, like has felt that before where people are suspicious of your expertise or they want to challenge you. But, you know, there's a real pride and joy in knowing your shit. And if you're with a good group and you support each other and that means everybody, not just other women, like it's nice. And you can kind of go over those bumps and keep doing it. So yeah, follow what you want to do and find the right people to do it with. And I think this is a really special industry to be in. There's, you know, at its best, the spirits industry is like the thing that's being shared in celebration and connection. And, you know, that we get to play a part in that is awesome. And I feel like it attracts you know, really like warm, lovely people. And so there's a lot of good folks in the industry, and I think there's lots of space to be a young woman, like, you know, making your way in this industry, or not young woman, just anybody. It's a good spot to be.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Molly Lewis and Hannah Lowen of New Riff Distilling for joining us. You can learn more about New Riff at newriffdistilling.com. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.